Welcome to Get Ready Alaska, the State of Alaska's Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management podcast. Today I have with me Richard Osterman. He was here in Kodiak, Alaska during the 1964 earthquake and when the ensuing tsunami or tidal wave arrived. And he's going to tell us a little bit about his experience. So welcome to the podcast, Richard.
Thank you.
What were you doing in 1964 here in Kodiak, and how old were you?
Well, I was born and raised here in Kodiak. I was born July 9th, 1944. So I saw a lot of growth here up to 64. And I had got back to town at noon after being gone for 6 months National Guard training. Got back at noon, 5.5 hours later, there was no downtown. I had made one walk through town right after I got back, saw my folks, and talked a while, and then went downtown, came back for dinner. We were sitting down to have dinner when the earthquake hit.
And what was that like?
Scary, wonderful, and awesome. It was almost any description you want to put on it. That was it.
Yeah. What did you think was happening when it started shaking like that? Did you know?
We'd had a lot of earthquakes before then, all minor ones. They were nothing like the 64. And when it hit, we all knew it was the big one. And we moved out of the house, close to the doorway, except for my one sister, who decided to grab hold of the fishbowl that she had cleaned and was holding it and sitting in the middle of the floor holding the fishbowl. We got her off that, and we took her off to the side. And then my dad and I stepped outside, and I was standing on a cement walkway that goes around the house. There was six steps down to another lawn down below. It was a two-story house. It was up on Thorsheim, and I was looking, and Dad and I were looking and watching the ground roll, wave after wave, watching cars stop and walk, just rolling like a boat. Guys get out of their car and standing on and trying to hold on to the car rather than driving. And it seemed like it went on for a half an hour or so, but I know it wasn't very long, really. It was like 4 or 5 minutes or something like that. When it was done, my dad asked, "What did you think of it?" And I told him, same thing. I told him it was scary, but it was also beautiful. It was just the power of nature at work, and it was absolutely beautiful.
Wow.
And he says, "You have any questions about it?" I said, "I do have one question." I was standing on a cement pad, and there were cement steps going down alongside of the house. There was a half inch or so gap between the house and the steps. And one thought was, is the house going down or are we going down? Thinking of the big earthquake in California. And I asked Dad, I said, "Well, I never noticed that crack before," and he laughed. He actually laughed at me. He said, "That's an expansion joint that I put in when we built the place." So it was built there for just this.
Wow. Was there a sound associated with the earthquake?
There was a rumbling, and it wasn't like the hard winds that you get here, that you can hear them coming. They sound like a freight train coming. It didn't sound like that. It was a dull roar that hit, and you could feel it. And then it was gone, and in each, there were a number of little ones as we went through the time. There wasn't just one quake. It was a number of them right together, as I remember it. And I guess that's all I can say on that part of it.
So there was a tsunami. In those days, they called them tidal waves. Did you have any warning that a tidal wave was going to arrive? And did were you near the coast at that time?
Well, we lived up on, like I said, up on the hill on Thorsheim, and we could look down in across the valley and up to the other side of the valley. Could look down onto town and onto the boat harbor. And when you have a quake like that, you have approximately half an hour before the tidal wave comes in. So we already knew that. We'd been told that that was the way it was since we were little. So my brother was at a job down along the channel at Kodiak Airways, which is, so he said he was going to go down and see. I said, I'll go with you. And we went down there, and there were guys still in there working. And when one of them stopped him, and they said, well, yeah, the channel went completely dry. The channel is deep enough that a fuel barge could come in and unload their fuel at a low tide. But that channel went dry. Mm. And we said, you guys get the heck out of here because that water's going to come back a lot harder than it is. And my brother looked at the pilots and said, grab those planes and get them up on the lake. And they jumped in the two planes that they had still down there, and they saved them. Mm. We went back home. And my brother, on the way back, he said, we got to stop down at the police station and see if we can, you know, if he needs any help. And so we went up to the house, told my mom what we were going to do. And we went down to the police station, which was right down the hill from us, and talked to Chief Ryans. And he said, do you boys have pistols that you can strap on? And we said, yes. And he said, well, go home and get them and come down. I'm going to deputize you. I am declaring martial law. Mm.
How long did the martial law, how long was that in effect, and how long were you deputized?
It was in effect for probably about a week, I think. Mm. I was deputized for about 3 days. I was up for 3 days, actually, before I crashed and died for 8 hours and then another 3 days. When I got back to Kodiak, or before leaving Anchorage, flying back to Kodiak, I'd heard that the National Guard unit from Kodiak was in training, a two-week encampment up at Fort Richardson. I said, I'm not going there. I'm going to go home. And sergeant that was there said, go for it. And they didn't get back for 3 days. And they had to, I don't remember how they even got in, because the runways were in a mess. I think they came in by helicopter, but I'm not sure.
What was the first you remember of the tsunami that came in?
First I remember was standing, talking with my dad outside of the place after my brother and I came back. And before we went down to the station, we were looking down and looking at the islands. And we watched the wave come in and break over Bird Island, come in, lift up, break, come right on over, break over the breakwater out here, which was much closer than where it is now, and watched a flat bottom boat picked up, go inland quite a ways, come back and go right through breakwater, go out, come back through the breakwater again about 3 or 4 times. Before it finally sunk. That was a scary part of the whole thing. Yet more than the earthquake was the tidal wave. We had a high tide every 15 minutes for quite a while.
What did you do during that 3 days that you were up?
Well, most of it I was standing up on Rezanoff, up by close to the Baptist church up there, and stopping people from going in town. Mm-hmm. That's what we were ordered to do, stop them. You know, if they wanted to come in, they had to go down to the police station and get a pass from the chief. One guy that came down, it was the first night, and it was about probably 8 o'clock at night. still light out. And he came down, and he was going to go by me, and I told him, Curly, his name was Curly Jones, and he was a barber in town, and he had a shop downtown. He said, hey, you want to go down to my shop and look? I said, Curly, it's gone. There's nothing left. You can't go down there. Mm-hmm. I said, if you want to go down, you can go talk to the chief. And he rattled off something, really bad words about that chief. And he started to go by me. I pulled my pistol and cocked it. And I said, Curly, I will shoot you in your other leg, and you'll be limping on both legs. You cannot go any further. He says, I know your dad and mom. And I said, I know that, but if you go any further, I will shoot you in the leg. Mm. Now go back to your house. He stormed back up the hill to his house. Never saw him again. We're driving around with my brother and I, driving around making sure that nobody was hurt, nobody was, you know, making sure that they were away from the water, staying away and not getting down into trouble. Can't remember what else I did. Then the guard came back, and I went up there, and we were stringing line from the ACS building up on the hill. That was the only place that had any communications. Mm-hmm. The phone company here was totally had gone underwater. So they had a communication up there, and I don't even know what kind it was, but we could ran wire for a telephone from the school, which was high school, which they had designated as place to, safe place to be. Then we were running, going around, driving around, making sure things are safe. We got a call from the police station to meet the city crew down on the corner of Rezanoff and Main Street. And when he got down there, the guy said, I want you just to stand here by this flatbed truck. Don't let anybody get close to it. One of the city crew was up on the truck. Two cop cars went up. Cops went into the house, went up, knocked on the guy's house. This one blue house that was there. They said we had a search warrant. And they went in and they came out and motioned for the other city crew to go in. They went in and they started bringing out boxes and throwing them up on the on this flatbed. And this guy up there had an axe and he was breaking. Hmm. My friend Fred and I, we were almost crying watching a river of booze run down the street. They had probably 50 or 60 full cases of booze, hard liquor. He said, well, I'm trying to save it for the owners. Because all of that was down on, stored on down on the dock, and it disappeared. And the next day, Fred and I were out, and we were over by Gibson Cove, which is on here by Dead Man's, what they call Dead Man's Curve, the big curve that you get to. It's got a place where you can look out now, and they have glasses. If you look down, there's a beautiful beach down on the other side, little cove area there. Well, we were going there on Gibson Cove, walking, looking for dead bodies. That's what we were doing. We didn't find any, thankfully. But we got down there, and we were thinking about going back, and then I said, what's that sound? And Fred says, that sounds like some kind of metal clinking together. Well, let's go see what it is. And we went up over the hill that they had taken down now. And we looked down in this white beach. You could not see any of the white sand. Not a drop of this white sand could you see. Hmm. Could hardly see the water for all the beer cans. That's where all the beer went. Huh. We called that in, and the city crew came out with axes, and they cut everything.
Huh.
And when they were doing the bottles, I asked them, why are you breaking them? They says, because the doctor said that the salt water could go through that and get into through the cork and then make that poisonous. Mm. The same with the beer that could have eaten its way in and, you know, become poisonous.
Right.
They didn't want to trust it. I don't know how long it took them to clear up that beach, but there was a lot of booze there, beer. Mm-hmm.
You were out looking for people that were lost. Did you know anyone here in Kodiak that died during the earthquake?
No, I did not know any of them.
And did you know people that lost boats or homes?
Yeah. One of the guys that I went to high school with, he said, I was talking to him later afterwards, he said, well, he was down on his boat with some friends. We were sleeping. And they'd been out partying the night before, so they were still sleeping even late in the afternoon. So they'd hit at 5:36, I think, or something in the afternoon. And he said, we woke up and said some bad language about somebody doing something to the boat. They cut them loose. And he was waking everybody up, and they got up, and they looked around, and they said, no, we had something happen. But they were on a boat, never felt it. Didn't feel the wave, didn't feel the earthquake.
How did the community come together after the earthquake and the tsunami? You know, there wasn't power, food stuff was destroyed, stores were closed.
Yeah, everything. They did it just like they have always done, volunteers. They had people come. They were bringing stuff out of their houses and taking them up to the high school for those that needed it. Any spare stuff came up there. And to the churches.
As part of the National Guard, were you brought back to Anchorage or somewhere to serve elsewhere in the state, or were you just able to stay here in Kodiak?
They came back to the town only because we were an infantry outfit, and we would have been, if they had sent us somewhere, it would have just been guard duty type thing. You know, they had the engineers enough, those were in Anchorage still, and Fairbanks, and other ones, but ours was basically an infantry outfit here, a company. I was a gunner on an 81 millimeter mortar. The feds came in. Federal government came in, you know, the state was declared a disaster. And urban renewal came in, and I think it destroyed the town.
Hmm. How so?
They reshaped the whole town. Mm-hmm. They tore down a hillside to make room for other things in town, and to have that as the gravel for the roads and stuff to repair them. And then they built downtown like it was designed for down south somewhere.
Is there any stories that really stick in your mind from that time that you think back to often?
No, I think that's about it.
Okay. So when an earthquake happens today, how does that make you feel? What do?
I stand still and wait to see if it's going to be a strong one or not. If there's been no indication that it's going to be a strong one and there's nothing going off on the, you know, evacuation or the emergency stuff going off, I just figure, well, it's not as strong as 64. I left Kodiak in the fall of 64 to go to college down in Sitka, Alaska, to Shelton Jackson Junior College down there. And then I met my wife down there, and we got married the next year. Then we transferred me down to Ashland, Oregon for college. Finish off college, and I got out of there in 70 because we only went two quarters. so that Helen could go fishing. He was a commercial fisherman up in Bristol Bay. And I would come up and I would work, and we'd get enough to go to college, finishing. But it took us longer to finish up. So it was 1970 that I graduated. Came back and immediately got a job in Seward at the Alaska Skills Center. Went there, and then we were there 2 years and moved down to Juneau. I was down in Juneau. We moved down there in October of 72. That winter they had an earthquake. And I was sitting there, standing there, just, you know, not even really thinking about it. And they came up to me and they said, hey, we're having an earthquake. We've got to get out of here. I said, that's not an earthquake. That's just a little shake. Don't worry about that one. Another time I was there, we had an earthquake, and I never felt it. Hmm. I was walking and never felt it. And they said, come on, we're having an earthquake. I said, we are? I was so desensitized, I guess would be the word I'm looking for, on earthquakes, that this is not a major earthquake that we're having. We're having a minor one right now. You could tell the difference. And I've been where I have actually, everything was flat, you know, swaying. Those ones I move out of the way. I move to a wall, a doorway.
64 Quakus, the second largest earthquake ever recorded. Have you ever experienced anything similar to that in your life? Maybe not an earthquake, but some other type of event, or is it just unparalleled?
We had some major landslides down in Seward, or in Juneau when I lived there. They didn't affect me at all, but it blocked the road where we had to go to town. And they had it cleared off fairly quickly. Other than that, no, I haven't been.
Is there any individuals that were around town that really stand out as someone that did a lot of good stuff or showed a lot of leadership during the quake?
No, what I remember is it was just everybody was pitching in and helping. And if the mayor asked somebody to do something, it was done. If somebody at the high school needed something, they got it. I mean, it was like a big family together, working together.
Community just really came together to support one another during the... Nowadays, we have sirens and alerts on our phone and our TV and our radio. What do you think about all this new technology that we have to warn us of tsunamis and let us know the status of earthquakes?
The one we have here, I think, is pretty good. I think it needs to be a little louder. I live right now over on Near Island in 55 years and older. I have to live there, so it's for the elderly. And when they set off the alarm this morning at 10:15, I barely heard it, and I had my hearing aids on, in and on. That sound, that building is so well built, we don't hear that sound. Mm. They need to bring something over there, or either that or make it louder. Mm. They've tested it when we were living. I was living on in Maple Street. We were in an apartment in the back of there. That was not a well-built apartment, and I barely heard it in there. And Helen, my wife, says she could barely hear it, and she had good hearing. And that was the one where they were trying to get it adjusted to where they put in the new ones, and they were trying to adjust it, and we weren't hearing it, and we let the city know that. And they went in and made some adjustments.
Is there anything you'd like to add, maybe a question I haven't asked?
The only thing I guess I'd add is that after it was over, I heard that the island had shifted. The north end went, I think the north one went up about a foot, and the south end of the island dropped 2 feet or something like that. It has now come back to where it was before. Mm-hmm. And that's the other earthquakes that we'd had, is it was adjusting itself, I think.
So we think of the Earth as kind of a static thing, but in reality, it can move around quite a bit during these earthquakes.
Because, you know, that makes it that the island is on the pinnacle. Or is on a pedestal or something.
Mm-hmm.
That it's balanced on this thing. And one of these days, it's going to slide off. I don't know when. I hope it's not when I'm around.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing your story about the 1964 earthquake and tsunami. Really thank you for your time, Richard. This is the Get Ready Alaska podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcast and on Spotify. And stay tuned for more stories from 1964 earthquake survivors and other podcasts about emergency management and emergency preparedness here in Alaska. Thanks.
Thank you.